to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Good morning, Columbia CSL. I'm very happy to be with you once again as we gather together to explore and contemplate the vastness of the true spiritual nature of our being. Oh, yes, surely there is no lack of life's going on within us and around us in which to grow our capacity to demonstrate our conscious application of spiritual principles and practices. And right now, we are in a very rare conjunction of three major holidays, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They're all occurring at the same time this year, which is very odd in a way, but synchronistic in another. You know, the Jewish observance of Passover, which began on April 15th and runs through this week till the 23rd, is a celebration of freedom. The Christian celebration of the Passion, the Last Supper, all the way to the resurrection, is a celebration of love's power. And Ramadan, a prayer for holy month, is about the commitment to what it means to be faithful. So reveal, release, rise, being the topic of the day, is really about one thing and only one thing. That there is one power, one infinite intelligence that is manifesting life through the spontaneous creative energy of love. So we're going to be talking a little more about that today. You know, revealing our true spiritual nature as love, releasing anything unlike its nature to rise in a way that lifts others and the world up. Let me say that again. Revealing our true spiritual nature as love, releasing anything unlike its nature to rise in a way that lifts others and the world up. So thinking about this time of year in this rare conjunction of freedom, resurrection, through the power of love and deep abiding faith, what is wanting to be born within you at this time? In you, in your community, in the world? What can you see? What can you believe? What can you be convinced about? And declare it so and expect it to be. What can you see? What can you believe? What can you declare and be so convinced about that you expect it to be? You know, when I ask myself these questions on what I consider to be a very holy day, I'm reminded of the six-pointed Star of David, you know, and it. The six-pointed Star of David holds within it an upward-pointing triangle interwoven with a downward-pointing triangle. And the upward triangle symbolizes that which we aspire towards, and the downward triangle, that which is, which can be seen as an impediment to our goal or as an opening for mental transformation. So sometimes the upward triangle represents all of our aspirations in the spiritual realm as we walk the spiritual path, as we believe what our truth is and learn to live in the integrity of those principles. And then the downward triangle feels like it's pulling us back or against, working against, dividing us, right? And that's what causes the struggle, I believe. But this place where the goal or God is not seen is also the same place where God can be experienced. And that's the point, right? It's all God. It's everywhere present. So what is the obstruction in your life that divides you, that pulls you away from this kind of truth? You know, obstructions are places where I think we give power to that duality where one does not see God. It is said, cleave a piece of wood, I am there. Lift up a stone, and you will find me there. So the problems in the body of our affairs in our physical realm tend to get our attention sooner or later, but until then, they can be overly distracting to our further detriment. You know, problems may also turn into cause the creation of our highest good. So problems may also turn into the cause of the creation of our highest good. Have you been there? Can you relate to that? I certainly can. I certainly can. In all prosperity and abundance teachings, you know, we're guided to embody the energy of truth, of substance, and the one source as the springboard to new creative thought and the rise of something greater than has gone before. In this science of mind philosophy, we're asked to look at not needing to change the way we are or what is going on as it unfolds, but rather observe, decide, and declare our next possibility and subsequent action. To try and actually change the natural unfoldment or effect of the cause on the level of the experience just doesn't bring us the fruits we desire. For we know that it is our thoughts which are creative. And so therefore we go to the thoughts or cause back of our experience instead to evoke change through the use of universal mind. You know, I've often used this idea of an outward enemy, you know, the other. Sometimes I call them in my mind an enemy of the state of my being. And then I remember that I'm fighting against a projection of my own mind. And in this, I get to practice holding my seat. I actually learned holding my seat when I traveled with a colleague to Mexico many years ago. And it's a term that horseback riders use. Hold your seat so that you're staying at one with an alignment, right, with the movement of the horse. And when I hold my seat, I remember that I'm the creator of my reality in the face of devastating conditions or those unmanageable people. I hold my seat, and what happens is I extract the upside. I extract the truth, which is always the gift, if we look for it. Recently, I participated in the CSL Kenya monthly service called Froggy Friday, and loved the example of what our Centers for Spiritual Living spiritual leader, Dr. Edward Filyung, shared, having been on calls with the Ukraine. He told us that during the time of the calls, they had to remain in the dark. They didn't turn the lights on for fear of being bombed. So it's not, he said, it's not mine to say it's all good in those situations, but to stay strong with them and see from divine light in his heart. He said, I see from the place of divine light in my heart. So when I share this little piece with you, what might be seen as the gift in this situation to you? You know, our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, gave us a gift. It is spiritual mind treatment, a prayer done affirmatively in the present tense to reveal the wholeness of truth in the mind of the one doing the prayer. And praying is the way of being active, not passive. And it is something we can do, and it is something that can be considered enough. You know, it's all good, whole, and in divine harmony in this realm of spirit, but we forget that because it's not so at the level of humanity or socially speaking. Because goodness, this goodness of God takes the time it takes to be revealed, to come into the full realization of God presence and its wholeness. And our use of prayer can open our energy. Our use of prayer can open our energy, reveal truth, and bridge our current reality into the nature of spirit. You know, and just to top this idea off, and I love this and I use it all the time, because I always have to remember Dr. Holmes' statement, nothing needs to be healed. Only something needs to be revealed by means of us. So what is that something in your life today, in this day, as we are reminded of new birth? You know, the science of mind philosophy is a teaching where we are given the tools in which we can learn to accept the paradox, the complexity in life. You know, and when we can hold both the spiritual and material realm as one creative energy, expressing in ways that appear in contrast to each other, then we have more peace inside because we know what is ours to be and what to see and what to do. I'm going to go back as an example of this to a story in the Old Testament. A time when it was said that in order to be clean again, you had to complete certain rituals. You know, in Mark 5, it states that there's a story about a bleeding woman. A bleeding woman who had been bleeding for many years, and in her culture, that made her ritually unclean. You know, she'd not been able to touch anyone or go to public worship in years, but Jesus breaks all the rules. He touches her and she is made well. What did he touch her with? In the Old Testament, we see that people took their gift to the altar to be sacrificed to the Lord, and that the altar made the gift clean. The altar sanctifies the gift. Right? In the book of Hebrews, there's a very elaborate theology of Jesus being the altar, the priest, and the gift, all three at the same time. And what we see in Jesus is that instead of the uncleanness rubbing off on him, Jesus's virtue, our knowing in prayer, rubs off and makes the other person clean, brings the gift of truth to the light. Every time Jesus heals someone, he brings the virtue and sanctity of God and puts it on that person who is ill, who is struggling, and who has been demonized within their own mind. And when the bleeding woman touches Jesus, he feels the virtue go out of him and into her. It's sort of a reversal of uncleanliness in a way. You know, the making clean, the making well. That's what the concept of shalom is all about. Shalom is the making well, the making whole, the bringing of well-being. So when Jesus touches with this intent to heal, what he brings is shalom, peace, peace. And that's what Dr. Edward was explaining to us, that he sees with the light of divine love in his heart, and he brings peace so all can stand strong together and know a greater truth and reveal, therefore, that greater truth. An important aspect of the bleeding woman's story has to do with the theology of retribution, which blamed the victim and was common in that time and culture. You know, if you were sick, you stayed sick, and it was because you or someone in your family had sinned. Do we feel that way sometimes? We keep repeating the same cycles, and we keep finding ourselves fall back into that black hole, right? Because we keep thinking the same thoughts about who we believe we are, and we can't, and we're not giving ourselves a ladder to come out to reveal the light, right? People saw this woman's problem and blamed her for it. Right? They were ashamed to be near her, but Jesus publicly praised her. He said, your faith has saved you. And what a shocking thing that was, because everyone else thought she was in that bind specifically because she had the wrong kind of faith. They blamed her for her own illness, but Jesus restored shalom for this woman. And now she could be part of the faith community again. And maybe she could even challenge their bad theology by the fact that her faith made her well. Boy, I share this story as an analogy to a foundational key to cultivating this idea, this creating this idea of an abundant life, both on the levels of cause and, of course, therefore on effect, through the power of love's emergence and calling in abundance and wholeness through prayer. Isn't it incredible to see the light bulbs of awareness of one's truth and wholeness come on? You know, for those who somehow survive the extreme pain of both inner and outer judgment. It's a precious and holy thing to observe. And you know, many of these folks, including me, including you, because of our awakening, become conduits of extraordinary grace and prayer and compassion and restorative power in this world. Religious science teaches a universal concept of God, and it thinks of the divine spirit as flowing through everything, personalizing everything, giving warmth and color to everything. Spirit meets with spirit and communes with itself, even in our ordinary conversation. So never overlook or underestimate the importance of this all-inclusive attitude. Bridge that gap between the spiritual and the material. Release the idea of duality into oneness. You know, it's only when we meet God in each other that we comprehend the meaning of the divinity of man. Humanity proclaims divinity, and it is through humanity that divinity reaches its highest revelation. Religious science understands that every man's attempt to unify with the divine is really an outcome of the cosmic urge, which presses against everything, flows through everything, and proclaims itself in everything. So let's move for a moment to this idea of a resurrection, new birth. You know, what has always been basic to resurrection or Easter is, yes, the crucifixion. So if you want to resurrect, you must have crucifixion. If you want to come together in a greater or higher order, you must have a breaking down of the old. But too many interpretations of the crucifixion, I think, have failed to emphasize that. They emphasize more the calamity of the event, the drama. And if you emphasize that, then you look for someone to blame. That is why people have blamed the Jews for it. But it is not a calamity if it leads to new life. It is not a calamity if it leads to new life. Through the crucifixion, we are unshelled. We are able to be born to resurrect a greater truth, something that has gone before. And that's not a calamity. So I'm asking, inviting us all to look freshly at this so that its symbolism can be sensed. You know, when we can embrace the messiness of our lives, our feelings, we become a conscious participant in a larger flow, a flow that brims over with the ever-changing and ceaseless movement of life, birth, and death, of tragedy and glory. As we remain still within the sacred marriage of our ego and our essence, we're carried to a place that is filled with ease. The whole discipline of seeking and achieving illumination can be conducted from the energy of love. Remember that the voice of the beloved is both what we are and the source of what we are. And when we do remember this, we are more able to bring ourselves into the present and let go of the need to be distracted from other things. Right? And our distraction comes in the form of so many, many questions that always begin with why. Have you noticed that? We seem obsessed with putting a question mark where God has put a period. So let us not enter the confusion, because confusion is a rejection of what is. And it brings about a desire to change the situation. Excuse me. And it's not that change is not the order of the day, perhaps, but sometimes change, or the need can change, to change, can come from the belief that what I am looking for is somewhere other than where I am. So just keep that in mind, right? And granted, even though our seeing is sometimes more mindful when we are surrounded by the new, we risk getting caught up in spending all our time and energy moving about searching instead of seeing what we long for is right here. So today, let's look at seeing a new way rather than needing to see new things or places. If we see the crucifixion only in historical terms, we lose the reference of the symbolism, you know, and how it refers to us. Jesus left his mortal body on the cross, the sign of the earth, to go to the Father with whom he was one. We, similarly, are to identify with the eternal life that is within us. The symbol at the same time tells us of God's willing acceptance of the cross, that is to say, of participation in the trials and sorrows of human life in the world, so that God is here with us, not by way of a fall or a mistake, but with rapture and joy in all of it. Thus, the cross has a dual sense. One, our going to the divine, and the other of the divine coming to us. It is a true crossing. It is a true crossing. So how can we see the greater truth in this story, or the stories we hold about current life and world situations? I remember that in India, they teach three spiritual laws. Hopefully I'll get these right. And I have used them to guide me. And remember the first law, the person who arrives in, is the right person. So the person that comes into our life is the right person, right? That no one enters our life by chance. And all the people around us, all those who interact with us, are there for a reason, to make us learn and progress in every situation. See the light, see the truth in every situation, meaning the light within us. The second law, whatever happens is the only thing that could have happened. That's it. Nothing, absolutely nothing of what happens in our life could have been otherwise. Even the smallest detail. There is no, well, if I had done that, right? Who said that? The other one would have happened. No. What happened was for us to learn whatever we needed to learn, reveal whatever we needed to reveal, and move on. Any of the situations that happen in our life are ideal, even if our mind and ego are reluctant and unwilling to accept it. The third law. The moment it happens is the right time. The moment it happens is the right time. Everything starts at the right time, not sooner, not later. When we are ready to start something, that's when it happens. So being still in any anxiety will cause the truth to reveal itself. Being still will offer us unrestricted, unconditional entry to the place everyone has access to always. The power, the creative presence right here. And each of us are called, right? But few are chosen, said Jesus. So It's up to us to choose ourselves. I would like to change that around and say, metaphysically speaking, many are called, but few choose, right? Few choose. I love to spend this time, Easter, in the contemplation of the surrender, of myself to what I like to term sometimes as the God-mad, you know, which is for me willing to follow the knowing that comes from deep within my essential nature, which is larger than myself, even when I cannot justify my choices to those around me or me. Being God-mad is being willing to find my way of making love to the world today. Rumi once said that the way you make love is the way God will be with you. And just like Mother Teresa, who said, who is said to have touched the world and those in need, as many of us would touch the one with whom we are in love, with passion and tenderness. So I ask you on this day of surrender to the God-mad, can you be those people who make love to the world to take the war out of it? I think about the same principle, this same principle at play even more profoundly in the crucifixion scene. You know, the men get all caught up in the drama. They bluster and say bold words, or so it's told. They pull out their swords, then they get terrified and all run away. But the women, sorry, I have to say this, behave quite differently. They just stay present. They witness. They are the ones who remain at the foot of the cross, loving and being present to Jesus through his last breath. It is this presence, this witness, this willingness to remain at the foot of the cross, even if that's all we have the power to do, that is our role in today's story. Faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. We show this to be true, and we stick around to love even when faith and hope seem to have utterly fled. The opportunities to practice this are practically innumerable. So the calling in today's message is to do this. Reveal love as who we are. Allow it to release all things unlike its energy and give rise to this true spiritual nature in all. Jesus's legacy was love. To simply be with others, hearts wide open in everything they experience, may be one of the hardest challenges humans need to face. This is the way of Christ, the way of love, the greatest way. It's walking into situations over and over where we feel powerless and failure seems to be the inevitable result, and just be there as loving witnesses with prayerful mind intention, seeing the divine light in our own heart, and be fully present to everything that is happening. You know, I know there are those who might scoff at this, who say it doesn't change anything in our broken and hurting world. But what if it's the only thing that does? The reason we're here this morning is not just because the ancient and powerful story of a resurrection happened, but because there's one going on now. You know, every time I see someone catch hold of the light within themselves, there's a resurrection going on. Every time I see a person put down his bottle or a crutch that has limited his vision, there's a resurrection going on. Every time I see a teenager go back to school, there's a resurrection going on. Every time I see a parent hug their child after conflict, there's a resurrection going on. So as one in God, this Easter Sunday, let us reveal, release, and let what is most divine in us rise up to what is most divine in the universe. God bless you and me, and so it is.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, ColumbiaCSL.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@ColumbiaCSL.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.